The views expressed in this program are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of WVUD or the University of Delaware.
WVUD presents Campus Voices, conversations with University of Delaware faculty, staff, and students about their teaching, research, service projects, and other interests. To introduce today's guest, here's your host, Richard Gordon.
Thank you, Jason. And joining us today for Campus Voices, we have another in our ongoing series of Voices of UDel discussions about diversity at the University of Delaware and in the surrounding community. Joining us on the telephone is Guillermina Gonzalez. She's the Executive Director of the Delaware Arts Alliance and a prominent member of the Latin community in Wilmington. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And sitting right across from me here in the studio, we have Abby Sarfo, who's a member of the class of 2016.
Hi. I'm a senior English major, and I'm an intern at WVUD. It's interesting to be on the other side.
Mm-hmm. Now, Abby's a first-generation African-American, literally.
I am, yeah. My parents are from Ghana.
And was raised out in York, Pennsylvania. And the final member of our panel today is multi-talented Victor Perez, professor in sociology, John Coltrane fanatic.
That pause worries me. It took you a second or two to figure out what you wanted to say. It kind of concerns me a little bit. Now, thanks for having me, Rich. I really admire the opportunity as well as the venue that you're giving a variety of people on campus to speak to these very important issues. So thanks very much.
Well, I think I want to begin by talking about, we're recording this interview on September 28th, so September 30th, excuse me, but last week there was an event on the UD campus where late at night on Tuesday, September 22nd, some objects were found in the trees that resembled nooses, we were told. And the next day we were told, oh, they were leftover lanterns. What do you think this incident showed us, both good and bad?
I mean, for me personally, I had never seen such a shocking, overt display of racism, nooses or no nooses. But I think the biggest thing that I've learned in the ensuing days is that the university has a lot to do. We have a lot of work to do in terms of making our Black students feel welcome and comfortable. The fact that all of these Black students thought that nooses being hung in the tree were even a possibility, I think that speaks to the racial climate here.
Victor, I heard from students that you were in the crowd there on the green on the 23rd when there was a big meeting to discuss.
I was. I was so emotional that day that it had a very personal impact on me. And I think that any faculty member here on UD's campus, hopefully, most of them, but I think that there will be an opportunity to talk about the need for diversity training among faculty as well. But many faculty probably also felt very similarly because we care about our students. And I actually let my classes go a little bit early after mentioning the gathering that was going to be going on because to be quite honest and frank, my Wednesday morning class, I just couldn't hold it together. I was just too out of it to even put any sentences together because of my concern for the students. So the gathering was a lot of things, but the couple of things that spoke to me as briefly as I can at the gathering was, one, the horror in some of the students' stories about their experiences early on when they came to UD. The things that they had been called, for example, just were absolutely horrifying. And the other thing that stuck out to me was when the discussions were happening on campus that day, there were several pronouncements about the need for diversity training and the need for more faculty involvement. And this did come out of some of the things said by Nancy Target as well as Carol Henderson and a few others, which is great because the diversity training among faculty members is absolutely necessary. Because if you were to hear about some of the experiences, now these are also only a handful of students had an opportunity to speak, but I think that they likely are sharing experiences that many people have felt on campus. One of the things that didn't come up was how they could go to their faculty and with their concerns, with their experiences, and in fact that they had felt that faculty had treated them poorly or misunderstood them and things like that. And so that was extremely revealing to me that students didn't feel like they could approach their faculty. And so that's one of the things that I felt was very important and needed to be said. And as Abby put it very eloquently, whether or not this was intentional, whether or not, however this was perceived, it allowed for the racial tensions and issues on campus to materialize and crystallize in an undeniable way, absolutely undeniable way. And that gathering was an opportunity for students to voice their experiences. And that's something that they don't have on a regular basis for a wider audience. And that's something that's necessary.
Guillermina, what was the reaction over in Wilmington to those events?
Well, nobody was happy about the situation. The official count of those things hanging, it was like it wasn't necessarily what people thought. In any event, whether it was the real thing or not, I think it facilitated a discussion that is very much needed. So let's just make sure that when we talk about diversity, we talk about the many groups that should be more clearly presented at the University of Delaware. Diversity includes not only African Americans, but also some other groups like Latinos, Asians, and the like. So the reality is that the University of Delaware needs to do a lot more than it's doing in increase and be more diverse on both counts, as a staff and a student level, and also faculty by the same token. Not enough. It is perceived, and it should continue making efforts and making inroads, making sure that everybody is welcome, and is not necessarily the case at this time, as we can see the numbers being reflected in a population that is primarily white. And I'm talking about 90-something percent or so, which is not reflective of the population of Delaware at all.
Now, one of the things, though, that I do think that does reflect Delaware is the fact that someone could leap to the conclusion that these remnants of lanterns were nooses reflects sort of the, I think, still the racism that pervades this area.
I mean, I think people fail to forget that Delaware did have slaves. I mean, we weren't technically a part of the Confederacy, I don't believe, but I'm pretty sure that slavery ended in Delaware only 150 years ago. We didn't integrate at the university until like 1971, I think the year was. So it's not like this is a thing that happened so far in the past. Like, we're still reckoning with the aftermath of just hundreds of years of racial injustice, and I think that people, especially white students, if it's not directly affecting them, they don't necessarily know that that's something that we still have to deal with.
I think that one of the things that stood out to me, I'm a sociologist, and sociologists and others will tell you that the reality imposed upon you is the essentially the reality that impacts you. And one of the things that I remember thinking, because I think that there's debate about how the university's administration handled communicating what was happening in kind of an ongoing way throughout the night. And I think that in some ways they're damned if they do and they're damned if they don't. But I think that the administration handled it pretty well based on how they understood the situation at the times that they did. And so that's really hard to do. I mean, it's really difficult to do. And it was understood as a particular type of event and construed as a particular type of event. And so that event became real, if you will. And so I'm a faculty member, and I'm usually not up that late, and I happen to be doing a radio show that kept me up that late. So as a faculty member, I get an email regarding this late in the evening. And immediately I'm like in tears thinking, I'm worried about the students, that there were potentially nooses on campus. And the other thing that I was thinking about was the psychological toll that this would be having on our students. And so even though it, quote unquote, kind of turned out not to be that after an investigation the next day, what really matters is early on how it was socially constructed and communicated.
That perception and the communication about it.
And so for me, I think, again, to kind of dovetail on Abby's point, I remember thinking, what if I was someone's parent and they're calling home like, hey, mom, there's nooses hanging from the trees here. I mean, I don't even know how I would respond to
that. I'd pull my kid out of that school.
So I was really thinking about the students, and I think that the administration did do the right thing in communicating how it perceived the event. But Abby's right. The fact that that event could have been understood the way that it was speak volumes about what's lying beneath the surface here at the university in many ways for the students.
I think the Latin community experiences some of that in Wilmington as well.
Well, indeed. I mean, it's a group that is not necessarily first understood and then widely accepted. It's a work in progress. Now, the important thing, this is reflective of what is happening in the country, Richard, which is we need to talk about race the way we should talk and not be that politically correct, to be honest with you, because it's about time to set things right and celebrating what African Americans, but also other groups, bring to the table. As much as we might not be accepting, the reality is that this country is changing. Minorities will be the majorities in 2050, if not earlier than that. And the reality of that is that Latinos will be the majority of that minority. That's the reality. And we all need to adapt to that, because this is happening whether we like it or not. That's what is going to happen. So this is about time to really begin talking openly about race, because that's the big elephant in the room that nobody wants to really address. And what happened at the University of Delaware at this point is, to me, just reflective of a difficult conversation we all need to have right now.
I think you and I have, collaborated on some radio shows here at WVUD, Gary Minan, and one of the things that this drives me crazy is when I hear people say they shouldn't speak Spanish. They're in America. They should speak English. Whereas to me, it's embrace it. It's part of the cultural change that's happening here.
Indeed. I mean, diversity is to be celebrated, and particularly for groups like Latinos. It's not about being ashamed of where you're coming from and what you bring to the table, but to the contrary. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to stop respecting the place where you are living. In this case, if you're living in the U.S. and they speak English, well, you have to speak English. Yet, celebrating your own heritage and bringing that to the table as a cherry on the cake.
Abby, what kinds of things have you found here on campus? Have you found yourself sort of stereotyped?
You know, it's interesting. I don't find myself stereotyped so much as just frequently out of place. You know, like as a first-generation African-American, I don't really feel like I fit in with the African-American population here. And I don't necessarily fit in with white people, so I've always kind of felt like isolated. I think mostly what I get are just microaggressions. You know, people are like, oh, you're so white, things like that. Microaggressions are just kind of like little indignities that you get being like a minority in a predominantly white place. So like little like offensive remarks that aren't necessarily supposed to be mean or derogatory, but they just show ignorance and you have to deal with them on a regular basis.
I mean, what's lost with that kind of thing is that all of us have something special to bring when we're working together on a project. We all of us have something to bring based on our background. It's just we lose value when we discard the differences between us.
And I also think the point about microaggressions is very well put and very well taken, because all this is connected. Microaggressions all the way up into the institutional level. And we need to find perceptive ways to intervene at all of these different levels, and one of those ways is through microaggressions.
Stopping them.
Yes. Intervening when they occur, because they reflect. They also allow to support and recreate institutions that facilitate their place in people's everyday experiences in the first place. So one of the things that I wanted to mention was that there's a small informal gathering of students called Mosaic on campus, who I wanted to recognize. They're largely honor students, if I understand it correctly, but I've worked with them a little bit informally, and we've gotten together a few times to talk about these sorts of issues. We had a collection that got together last semester after some of the events in Baltimore and things like that, and one of the things that came up was microaggressions and how intervening at that level is important. And Abby's experiences are very telling, because on a campus where it's easy to not engage race, and it's easy to become to really become complacent, when you have those luxuries too, it's easy to also let those microaggressions go. And so some of the questions we raised with Mosaic, for example, is if you heard someone say something to a friend of yours or to even you as a person of color, what would you do? Would you risk or sacrifice that friendship to intervene in a place where those microaggressions are relatively common at the risk of losing a friend and or becoming ostracized, et cetera, et cetera? So, you know, the personal experiences of students on this campus must be heard. They must be heard.
But it's not just the personal experiences of the students. It's the personal experience of all of us living here.
Mm. Well, yes, absolutely.
I mean, when I first moved here over 30 years ago, I probably would have erred on the side of preserving the relationship and just abiding the microaggression. Now, you know, if somebody says something I disagree with, I'm an old fart. I don't care. I'll tell them when I think they're out of place.
Well, if you want to, you know, be a proactive agent of changing institutions of power, microaggressions is one way to do it. I think that hopefully would have a ripple effect.
I myself don't really go out of my way to challenge microaggressions when they happen to me. Honestly, it's just exhausting. And when I do, it doesn't get anywhere. People get very defensive. It gets very contentious. So I feel like it's almost like, what's the point? Like, why should I try doing it? But it's something that I do want to be more proactive about, especially in light of all of the events that have just happened. I feel like I can't just let these things slide anymore. I feel like people need to understand where I'm coming from so that they might better understand where, like, all of us as a Black community are coming from.
Just to add to that one more time, that's such a great point. One of the things that comes up is all the emotional labor that people have to do to address microaggressions usually comes from the people who are the targets of them. And so, you know, the emotional labor I've heard time and time again from students that they have to put into trying to change the culture and the institution that they're paying money to be a part of, they do. You know, so they're not in here working, doing their jobs and so forth, but they're setting up meetings, they're trying to get through bureaucratic circles and hoops and so forth to meet various people, et cetera, et cetera. They're doing all the work. And it's exhausting, exactly as Abby said. It's exhausting. It's a really, really good point.
Guillermina, anything to add here?
Reflecting on the fact that we need to change things at the University of Delaware at different levels, and I think I briefly mentioned that before. It's not just about the students, but also faculty and also staff, and I might even add at the board level. Things change when there's different points of reflection, and they should include all these groups together because otherwise change might not take root. So there's a lot to do, and I think the University of Delaware should take the lead more strongly in showing the inclusion and diversity that is very much needed. And honestly, what's been done is not enough. And this is a clear reflection of what just happened a few weeks ago. It's a reflection of that what we have done should be expedited.
I'm still, pardon me for raising this hobby horse of mine again, I think the University of Delaware is so reflective of the area of the community. Would you expect something different? I mean, how can the University of Delaware become more diverse as a student body if, given the school districts in Delaware, how can the University of Delaware become more diverse as a student body if it's so expensive and is it not attracting a diverse population from out of state? And then why would a diverse faculty want to come here so long as the student body's not diverse?
And maybe taking the example of some other universities, let me just mention a couple of examples, for instance. If you go to Delaware State University, you see the other side of the spectrum. Now, if you want to see a really inclusive university based on what I've seen and experienced, that is Wilmington University. And students pay everything they need to pay, not necessarily state-based. So maybe learning from some other examples might bring or shed some more light in what needs to happen, just to learn and apply what can be applied. And if you just happen to go at one occasion at Wilmington University, you'll see the diversity that you don't see in any of those universities mentioned, meaning University of Delaware and Delaware State University. So maybe by comparing and contrasting, and maybe by learning from their own business model, University of Delaware might be able to make more inroads in changing the culture that is needed.
Abby, why did you come here?
Honestly, I came here because I got money to come here. I originally wanted to go to Temple because I like cities, and it was a much more diverse and inclusive place. But I'm here.
how we're thrilled you are. But that, I mean, you mentioned you want to go to Temple, to a city, and Victor was raised in Baltimore. I was raised in the city of St. Louis, and Guillermina's out in the city of Wilmington. What are we seeing in terms of diversity in the big cities? Victor, you've got all the stuff going on down in Baltimore over the...
Gosh, I mean, do we have like 6 months to talk about this issue? You raised extraordinarily deep and complex issues. I think what we could say here today are how some of the events that have taken place, for example, in Baltimore, are revealing of the experiences of people that are products of longstanding historical sequences and institutional dimensions of subjugation and so forth. And so, you know, there's only so long that that institutions can create disparities between people in these profound ways before things begin to erupt. And these social movements that we saw were based in part on almost like trigger moments, where there were certain events that were just impossible to ignore, and you know, have been happening for quite some time. Don't get me wrong, but they were just impossible to ignore. And I really think that the impact of social media and a few other things that allowed for the citizens' kind of involvement in making these things public was really important for the social movements. I mean, cities, depending on where you are, you've got long, decades-long processes of in-migration, out-migration, based on race, based on economics, so on and so forth. And in the city of Baltimore, you know, we're now finding increasing levels of gentrification in certain areas. There was, 30, 40 years ago, there was white flight into the counties, and, you know, a county house that was exactly the same as a city house would be worth twice as much, so on and so forth. So these sorts of rifts run along racial and economic lines in these cities. And so, I mean, therein lies kind of evidence that it's not a coincidence that people's experiences are as different as they are. But I think the recent events, though they're not unprecedented by any means, there's a boiling point, there's a tipping point. And these events were you know, more or less catalysts for kind of hopefully making some sort of demonstrable change. But it's, you know, you ask that kind of question, like, I'm not sure what you want me to say on the radio right now. I mean, there's probably been 500 dissertations written about it. So,
I just know that, you know, myself, having been raised in St. Louis, you know, white privileged boy in an integrated city, riding integrated buses and sitting in integrated stands when I go to a baseball game and all, attending an integrated church, I thought everything was hunky dory, everything was fine. And the shootings in Ferguson, as my friend Ivan Henderson, the curator at the University Museums, point out, he was raised in Berkeley, the town next to Ferguson. No, Richard, he said, no. And we had really good dialogue between the two of us about that. And I think that's part of his perception, is that, and maybe it's true in Wilmington. Are there perception issues like that? I mean, in Wilmington, Guillermina?
There's a very interesting research being conducted by Jasser Payne about the African-American experience in the inner city, and it's very enlightening when you have the chance to take a look at. There are issues, but there are issues associated not only with race, but also the drugs and gangs associated. So it's like a circle of things, or a combination of many different things that are affecting individuals in Wilmington. And that's part of the increasing violence that you've been perceiving these days. So it's not only race, Richard. It's a combination of various factors that add to the mix of the race as well. So,
but what you have is with the criminalization of the drug trade and how harsh it's treated, you end up with an underclass of basically African Americans in jail.
Yes.
Well, I mean, the whole
and
war on
with
drugs is
another thing, the lack of role models and dysfunctional families, as far as I recall from his research. So it's a combination of various factors, as I expressed earlier. But it's quite interesting when you have the chance, perhaps, because he's professor at the University of Delaware, by the way.
Yes.
And he's been conducting this action research that brings subjects that are being studied as part of the research. So in any event, it might merit a different kind of program and conversation to reflect more what's actually happening in Wilmington.
And he actually will be speaking in the Race in America series mm-hmm. that's going on this fall semester here on the University of Delaware campus. I don't have the date right in front of me, but I assure you at the Campus Voices website, we'll put up the information.
Yeah, it's called the People's Report. His methodology is participatory action research, where people from the community were trained in doing research on their own communities. And so it's a really great way to build rapport, but also as a research method to institute change by giving skills and education, things of that nature, as part of the project. It's revolutionary in a lot of ways. It's really, Gary Mina's raised a very, very good point. The People's Report is what it's called.
Abby, what do you see as healthy coming out of this kind of discussion that's going on campus?
I think it's incredibly necessary that we're beginning to have these conversations, but I don't know, I feel cynical for saying this, but I don't know if anything will really change. You know, just the few people that I've talked to about it, like the few white students, they just don't really seem to want to be bothered. And I know that's not everybody. I feel a very, very sizable response from the student community was, oh, like everybody's blowing this out of proportion. We don't need to talk about any of this diversity race stuff anymore. Like it's just making everybody mad at everyone else. Like even one of my roommates, I tried to talk to her about it, and like she just fundamentally didn't understand. I think it's almost impossible to try and have an open discussion and change the discourse of a community when a sizable portion of that community isn't willing to listen.
Mr. Sociology?
Those are excellent points because those are lived experiences of students on campus. And the real challenge, again, I mean, there's a lot of discussion contemporarily about how difficult it is to talk about white privilege. And in a just a broad, you know, kind of context in general, it is very difficult to talk about. Now, it's even more difficult to talk about in a community that has that as such a luxury. It's easy for people to become complacent because the vast majority of them do benefit from it. So it's very challenging. It's very challenging. But I hope that complacency, that in sort of an ironic way, that the events, for example, last week can lead to an ongoing dialogue, ongoing consistent examination of these issues. One of the students put it very eloquently that, you know, in the past we'd all get an email and the next day it was over. And I'm really, really hoping that complacency subsides.
Well, this is the thing, is that you can't have individual, discrete diversity events. It's got to be an ongoing discussion. It's got to be an ongoing communication, learning to trust each other as people and work with each other as individuals.
You know, and Carol Henderson put it well, you know, diversity benefits everyone.
Yeah.
Everyone. I hope for the same.
I feel like one of the things the Delaware Arts Alliance does is it does value diversity in artists, and I think that carries over into the city of Wilmington altogether.
Indeed, and what happens with the arts, Richard, is the capacity of bringing people together regardless of where you're coming from or issues associated. The art allows people to concentrate on the beauty of things and the expression of things. And you find talking about commonalities first, and then diversity is celebrated, and then differences, they continue existing, but you begin from a more common ground.
Facilitating conversation. I hope that's what this radio program helps with. Thank you so much, Guillermina.
Thank you.
Abby, thanks a million.
Thanks.
Professor Perez, it's always a pleasure.
Thank all of you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Campus Voices. The views expressed on this program are those of the individual guests and do not necessarily reflect the official views or policies of WVUD or the University of Delaware. For more information about Campus Voices and to find archive copies of this and other episodes, visit our website. Using all lowercase letters, go to www.udel.edu/campusvoices. We invite you to tune in every Thursday morning at 8:30 for Campus Voices on 91.3 FM, WVUD, and WVUD HD1, Newark. or online at wvud.org.